We'll be back shortly with this is the Tate Report, CIT 89.5 FM. We'll be reaching shortly. We expect Professor Atif Kaborsi to talk about the little wrinkles in the Syria story, and just to kind of set the subject up. We did have a story which, again, is not looked into, and that's why the Taylor Report talks about it. In post-war Damascus, Syrians with close Canadian ties play an outsized political role. And I think we're joined by Professor Kaborsi. Are you there, sir?
Not bad at all. Nice to talk to you.
I was just reading the headline from the Globe, and I haven't seen wide coverage of it, but it seems to me it's a subject that we ought to be taking a close interest in. It's again, the title is, In Post-War Damascus, Syrians with Close Canadian Ties Play an Outsized Role. And I forget the number, but I think they say there are four people who are from the Syrians, but from Canada now, and they're in the cabinet of as we've talked about before, a problematic figure. You know, we all have whiplash here, trying to understand our role. For years, the gentleman in power, I call him gentleman now, was described as Al-Qaeda, or I forget which label, but he was called a Muslim extremist, and we all saw horrible footage of the work of people he's associated with, who putting people in little pink suits and lining them up on a beach and cutting their throats. We saw it. And at this time, there was also a group that we were told were the good guys, and they were called the White Helmets, but they were separate. They were just doing humanitarian work. Now, 2025, they're in the same, some of the people are in the same government with that individual, Jolani, I guess you will call him, and who's now called a statesman. So that's a heck of a trip for us mentally. Can you talk about what you think of it?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there is a concern here, and many have voiced it, that there is very limited inclusive representation, and that to a great extent Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, which is a transformation of Al-Qaeda, is the only power, and they are overly represented. And then when other Syrian groups are not represented, a lot of Canadians are there. And you're talking about four. There is one, Hind Qabawat. She is the Minister of Social Affairs and Labor. There is Mohammed Yasser Barnia. He's the Minister of Finance. And there is Raed Saleh, who used to be the head of the White Helmet, now is the Minister of Emergency and Disaster Management. And there is Mr. Abdel Qadir Husriya. He's the head of the Central Bank. These are not minor positions. They are key positions. Mm-hmm. And they're claiming that they are trying to get what they learned in Canada there, but there is no evidence of that. I mean, if Canada represents anything, I hope the positive side, is multiculturalism, is democracy, is respect for human rights, is ability to coexist peacefully among different groups. I hope they're not taking from it kowtowing to the Americans, as we were for many years, and now we're learning that our over dependence on the Americans has cost us a lot, as we are facing incredible challenges. What is absolutely concerning here is that these people, have they really brought in the representation of different groups, the Alawites, the Druze, the nationalists, the pro-Palestinian people, the secularists, are nowhere to be seen. And there is quite a bit of concern that this group is still loyal and quite adamant about its past. Its past is literally terrorism, Al-Qaeda. It's monopoly of power, its violence, and to some extent we're still seeing these things. I hope, you know, we will see something different, but so far we're not.
Yeah. You know, again, one of the things that stood out for me, because I think they really do, those who are in charge of matters in Washington, Ottawa, and London, elsewhere, they count on us to either not be paying attention or to forget things. And at one point, some 10 years back, I guess it was, the Syrian government under Assad had actually got the upper hand in large sections of Syria, and they the resistance, Al-Qaeda, whatever they're called, they were reduced and had to basically, they were given an opportunity to go to that northwest corner of Syria. And they were given an area there, and I remember there was transporting people, fighters of the Al-Qaeda group, and they, not all of them could make it there, and so a special enterprise was organized by the so-called leader of the White Helmets, who was a British officer, retired, and they managed to get a large number into Israel with the help of Chrystia Freeland and the Canadian government, and then spirited them out, and they brought them to Canada, a large number. I think it was a fairly large number. But all the time, I think they were misrepresenting who they were. That's the impression I get.
Well, absolutely so. I mean, look, there is one very objective test. These people were against the Assad government, the Ba'athist government in Syria, and they were concerned that it was a dictatorship, that it was exclusive, that it was repressive. Let's see what they have done. To what extent have they really become more inclusive? Let's see in the government. Who is in the government? All right, there is only one woman, and she is not Christian, as the Globe and Mail insinuated. She's an Alawite. She's from the same sect as ex-president Assad. To a great extent, the people of Syria are looking for a more peaceful, a more engaged ability to bring about progress, but also at the same time holding to what they consider very dear things, one of which is a non-sectarian rule. What we have here is basically a very sectarian rule. They want to have some sort of a peaceful coexistence among the many different, there may be 18 different sects and background in Syria. And Syria was a living example to a great extent of ability to be accepted by the other. And they really resisted and were unwilling to succumb to Israel, to American dictates. If you look at what we have today, the Gulani and his government are trying to kowtow to Trump and to Netanyahu, and to a great extent, they're willing to, go on the crawling on their elbows, so to speak, to the Israelis. Israelis occupy a very large part of Syria. Israelis are fomenting inter-community strife, pretending that they are, protecting the Kurds and the Druze. And people know that nobody needs to be a professor or a smart guy to know that Israel has no special regard for the Kurds and the Druze. They are very exclusionary, and look what they have in their own country. And to a great extent, what we really have is a situation where they're manipulating all these differences and these you know, small minority groups and arming them and protecting them, presumably, and they're literally trying to foment a civil war in Syria, want Syria to remain totally embroiled in conflict and violence and bloodshed and exclusion, because this gives them a chance to remain entrenched and able to influence things. Look, they've taken territory in the south of Syria and the Mount Sheikh, to a point where they control the water, control the resources, and control a large swath, and the Syrian government has not fired a bullet, has not stood to them.
I think, yes, that's a really bizarre moment that they're in, where they things like, well, they, today actually, the attack on another killing of the Hezbollah leader in Lebanon, Syria will say nothing about that.
Yeah. Well, you see, look, I mean, here is Lebanon going forward and backward, trying in every which way to get to a negotiated settlement. Despite the fact that many of the Lebanese, I'm one of them, who is really unhappy about really surrendering, this is not a peaceful agreement. If literally Israel is asking Lebanon to surrender. But the point is that despite all the efforts of the Lebanese to accommodate and to literally implement what the Israelis want, they continuously breaking the ceasefire, as if there is no ceasefire. They're on a rampage, attacking not only in South Lebanon, they're going all the way to the Beqa, they're going all the way to Beirut, they're going all the way to the north, in the Hermel and other areas. Israel is not interested in peace. It's Netanyahu government, and Zionism is violent. And they have really been mounting one campaign of destruction and violence and bloodshed and killing children and civilians. I mean, the attack in Beirut killed so many civilians. This is an area in South Beirut that is very densely populated, primarily, especially the area that they hit yesterday, is a very high-density civilians who have escaped from the other parts of South Beirut, is hoping to get some semblance of security. Israel is there literally on a rampage, I would call, with impunity. And the world has really stood up and watched and did nothing. And what they're trying, what they have done and succeeded in raising Gaza to the ground, they're threatening Lebanon to have the same fate.
Yeah. But by the way, part of this feature we're talking about here is that the role the West plays, for example, I mean, there was a very underhanded involvement by Ottawa and Washington with the white helmets and back channel work against the Syrian people. And one of the things that, in my mind, they have done that is so damaging is to say that is to talk about Hezbollah without mentioning that it is an elected, it is a political party that is represented in the Lebanese parliament.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Why don't they say that? I mean, it is a political entity. Instead, they turned it, they said, oh, no, it's terrorists.
No, they, I mean, absolutely. They portray everything they want, and that the upsetting thing is for people to believe them. Anybody who does not kowtow and surrender to them and do their bidding is considered to be a terrorist. And unfortunately, the West and the United States particularly is arming them, continue to support them, continue to protect them, continue to be complicit in their genocidal activities. Mm-hmm. And there is not much anybody raising. Look, they're talking about Hezbollah as if it is a force that has been parachuted into Lebanon. These people are literally defending their homes, their families, their schools, their hospitals. And we know that the Israelis have no respect for schools, hospitals, or any civilian infrastructure. Everything for them is permissible. And as long as we remain indifferent to their violence and allow this culture of impunity to exercise full freedom to destroy around them, there is no chance for peace. There is no chance for human rights, no chance for people to eke a living in peace. I don't think anybody in Lebanon would like a state of war. But you see, what is the price? Mm-hmm. You know, like, ultimately, people have dignity, have aspirations, have concerns about their families.
Mm-hmm. It really is like the proverb, you give something, give a dog a bad name and kill it. The labeling here has really been damaging. I mean, of course, we start off with this idea of the noble white helmets as though they were separate, and people forgot that that commanding officer, the guy who was running the whole thing out of Turkey, was a British intelligence officer, but they just completely danced over that. And I don't know how the Canadian public is supposed to be able to understand and push its government to do the right thing. We can't get the basic information right. By the way, that was a scandal. You remember he ended up committing suicide because they said he ran off with money, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I mean,
isn't that a horror story?
No, I mean, there are two issues here. One is to the extent that we do not raise questions, the extent to which we don't deconstruct the lies and propaganda. We are literally living under the command of intelligence services, whether it's the British or the Americans or the Israelis or the Germans. To a great extent, the people of Syria, instead of literally having a chance to unravel what they call the dictatorship and live in peace and in good neighborly coexistence, they are literally manipulated, literally organized, literally sponsored either by Saudi Arabia or Turkey or the United States or Israel. To a great extent, we are now at a worse situation than we were at Assad. At Assad, maybe you could say Iran and Russia, but now the new one is Israel, is Britain, is the U.S., is, you name it. We are literally Turkey and, every group is literally has its hands in Syria, what's going on. And look, there is nobody is unhappy and would not want the Syrians to live without brutal punishment and all these sanctions that the Americans and the Europeans have exacted on it. But there is a price. I know I want to eat, but I want to eat with dignity. I don't want to eat a substitute. I don't want to eat, on the ground, begging for my food or getting this piece or that piece, while at the same time I'm surrendering my dignity, my freedom, and my aspirations as a people for independence and freedom.
Hmm. Yeah, and apropos of the how we are surrounded and misled with the heavy thumb of intelligence people, you were at a conference recently, a speaker in Ottawa, and one of the distinguished guest was Mr. Richard Falk, and he got held up at and almost prevented from attending your conference, right?
Absolutely.
Must have been scandalized.
Yeah, absolutely. It was his birthday. He's 95 years old, and his wife is another prominent person at one time working for the UN in a high position. Look, I mean, Richard Falk is not an ordinary man. Richard Falk is one of the most renowned and top thinkers and scholars and have contributed so much on legal theory and legal practice in support of the human rights of the oppressed and the disenfranchised. Look, and
what 95, and he's a threat to our security.
Yeah, he's a threat to our security. What a complete farce. But what's even worse, this is not an affront only to Dr. Falk and Dr. Hillel. This is an affront to Canada. It blemished the image of Canada as a self-respecting, as a open society, as a legal society, as one that adheres to international law, international humanitarian law. And you can't find a stronger voice for the respect of international law, international humanitarian law, as much as Dr. Falk.
Yes. Now, that Professor Kibirsi, it is Atif Kibirsi. He is a professor emeritus, McMaster University, has worked in the United Nations in various departments. We are very fortunate to talk to you, and thank you very, very much for covering this matter, which I wish, I hope, Canadians will begin to focus on, particularly from the angle that you've presented. Thank you very, very much.
No, thank you for having me, Phil. Always a pleasure to be with you.
We look forward to talking again. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. That's Professor Atif Kibirsi, as I said, Emeritus Professor. I'll remind you, December 9 in Toronto, Dan Kovalik, different book list, and in Hamilton, December 8 at the church on 24 Main Street, 7 o'clock. And Pedro, thanks very much. And 33, 45, 75 is coming up.